You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Here to break it all down and to fill us in on what, if anything's going on with the Yankees, Andy Martino, SNY. You know him from Baseball Night in New York every night, 6 p.m. on SNY, on Twitter, at MartinoNYC. He's been all over this all weekend long. Andrew, how are you?
Christopher, don't tell anybody. I would only say this privately, but I'm ready for the lockout. I'm tired.
Shut it down. I need December off.
That's right.
All right,
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. And the answer might be obvious, but I want it anyway because it might not be. What put the Mets over the top with Max Scherzer?
The answer is probably the one you were thinking. Look, the Mets might well have been $50 million over the nearest bidder or something in that range. There was nobody playing that level of dollars on Scherzer. So that's first and foremost. But it was going to take more than that because Scherzer, by all accounts, is one of those players that's not just about the money and wants to win. So there was a real personal courtship by Steve and Alex Cohen with the Scherzer family over the weekend. And I think that was necessary to sell him on their vision for how they could win within his three-year contract. And also putting their money where their mouth was in the three additions that were really solid that they made around Thanksgiving time, Mark Canha, Eduardo Escobar, and then Starling Marte, which is more than a nice addition, one of the best center fielders in the game. Scherzer wasn't probably coming here without, A, a ridiculous offer, B, some proof in signing other players that they were ready to win, and C, that personal touch, and the Mets and Steve Cohen, really, they did all three.
So if they're selling the vision for how to do it, what is that vision for how to do it in this short amount of time that they have to work with while Scherzer is still at the top of his game?
The Mets' plan is to basically follow the Dodgers model when the Guggenheim Group took over 8 or 9 years ago, which is you don't have a farm system. The organization, player-wise, is not in great shape. So while you're focusing on scouting and development and drafting and international and all that stuff that you need in the long haul, you just spend an unbelievably big amount of money. Remember, of course, when the Dodgers took on like every bad contract the Red Sox had with Adrian Gonzalez and Josh Beckett and Carl Crawford, and they signed Zach Greinke to a huge contract. Those are the years before the Dodgers were the Andrew Friedman Dodgers. So what the Mets are doing is just that model, just spend until you're actually good in a deeper way.
Andy Martino, SNY, with us. Andy, I'm curious about this. The Scherzer reputation around baseball, when other players see a guy like him sign there, and we understand what the financials are, but establishing the good culture that they wanted to try to sell him on that they have in mind, how much of what they're doing in overpaying him actually plays into that too? We've got this guy who's got this great reputation as a competitor around baseball, and he's going to help us establish that culture.
No question. That's a big part of what Cohen's paying for and why he had to overpay, because the Mets don't have that reputation yet. And by overpay, I mean overpay the market. No one else is offering that kind of money to Scherzer, as I said. So, yes, absolutely. You're buying some credibility by saying we've convinced this winner who has a great reputation among his peers to come play for the Mets. The Mets had a real problem with this. It wasn't just a narrative that some people were around the league, some players were wondering what was going on here and whether they wanted to be a part of it. So this helps. It's such a parallel to Omar Minaya closing the deal on Pedro Martinez after the 2004 season, in that fourth year that Pedro, at his age, didn't deserve, like, in terms of you didn't think he was going to be good for 4 years, and he wasn't, but that's what it took to get this thing going. And this is the same idea, adjusted for inflation, of course.
Andy Martino, SNY. Okay, rest of the moves that they made over the weekend, you termed them as solid. Which one's going to make the biggest impact of them?
I think Marte, for sure, just because he's really good. I mean, this is an example of what the Mets are, where they are right now, in that we were talking about an upgrade for center field over Brandon Nimmo for a couple of years, and at one point they did try to trade for Marte when he was in Pittsburgh, and it was always like, oh, what's going to happen with center field? And now it's like, boom, it's Friday night, you got Starling Marte. Okay, good. Like, November. Done. And that's a real – I mean, that is – he is a guy. That is a real player when he's healthy. But I also think that one thing that's significant in a different way, and I'm not saying Marte is not a good clubhouse guy at all. I'm saying that Canna and Escobar are known as accountable, positive adults. And the Mets clubhouse so desperately needed an adult last year. I mean, they had young players who were trying to be leaders, and obviously we saw that it just wasn't a mature team, and they lacked leadership. Your Pete Alonso's and your Francisco Lindor's, for all their good intentions, need some grown-ups, I think, to shore it up a little bit, and that's what Canna and Escobar probably do for you.
Andy, with the reputations of these guys that have come in, with that in mind, does that play a role or give any more of a picture of what kind of manager they're now going to be looking for?
That's a good question. A more mature clubhouse means, you know, I still think Louis Rojas got a raw deal. So, I mean, he would have handled that just fine. But it probably tells you that maybe you need less of a Buck Showalter a little bit, who can grind on veterans a little with his intensity. And you might be even more equipped to go with a Joe Espada, who I think will become a really serious candidate for the job, who hasn't done it before, but is good and smart and charismatic and can trust the veterans to act like veterans. But I will say that as they've been working on this free agent stuff, Billy Eppler's had hardly a moment to get serious about the manager search, and that's what December will be for.
What else are we looking at here with the Mets? The other questions that need to be answered, one of which involves whether or not Jeff McNeil's going to be here, J.D. Davis, Dom Smith. How do you see this playing out, even if they do get a universal DH?
Well, they could keep those guys. I think, you know, in New York we're still used to what's everybody's role and they all have to be starters. But, you know, obviously the new model, whether it's the Giants, and the Giants had so many people get 200 bats last year. They could just keep these guys and put them in platoon situations or bench situations or start sometimes. I mean, that's a possibility, especially Smith, who they'd be selling low on. I understand that McNeil's available. Right now he's a second baseman. Could end up that way, but he might get traded. Davis might get traded, although they also kind of like the way he hits lefty pitching and could be a bat off the bench. He's not going to be the third baseman anymore, barring injury, but all these things are kind of still – they could go a number of different ways, but clearly they're not averse to trading McNeil and Davis probably too.
Andy Martino, SNY. Follow him on Twitter, at MartinoNYC. Baseball Night in New York every night at 6 o'clock, and he'll have plenty of coverage on Sports Night as well. Andy, Yankees, what's going on with Brian Cashman? That's just what everybody wants to know. Where is he?
Yeah, well, he's in the office or at home on Zoom occasionally. He's working hard. I mean, if Yankees fans haven't learned to trust Brian Cashman by now after year in, year out of winning, I don't know. He's obviously trying to make the roster better. He is in a position where they have Cole, they have Stanton, out $300 million contracts on the books. Makes it hard to play for guys like Seager who get there. And, you know, ultimately they also want to get really serious and take a look at extending Aaron Judge. So there's a lot of money being spent or allocated. So that's where the Yankees are. They obviously need to get better than they were last year. I think the trade market makes a lot more sense for them than it does for the Mets because they have pieces to trade. They would love to talk to Oakland about Matt Olson and some of Oakland's pitchers, but Oakland is not open for business yet, and Cashman can't control that. And the trade market generally has not been active this week because it's all free agency right now in advance of the assumed lockout. So the Yankees will be better by opening day. It might take a while. And by the way, they might sign a Story or a Baez or a Simmons or somebody this week, but it's getting late. I think they would have to do it by tomorrow at this point.
Okay, so with all of that in mind, where are we headed here with this CBA in the next few days? We're headed to a lockout. We know that. Last time you and I talked, I believe we called it more of a skirmish or a police action than an all-out war.
Yeah.
Would you still classify it that way?
Yes, so far. You know, the rancor doesn't seem there yet. I mean, it's always there because this is not just stagecraft. These two sides really don't like each other, no matter what. They try to downplay that, but I've been on calls with these guys summer of 2020 screaming about the other side. And although, like you mentioned, Chris, like we've talked about how this doesn't seem like a labor war coming, but it didn't in 2020 either, and then tempers took over. So if they lock out, if there's no 11th hour deal, and they're probably it won't be. The assumption now is they'll get something done in time for February, say. But, yeah, that's dangerous to just put that in ink. You never know once they get negotiating.
All right, last one. Are the Mets now legitimate contenders for the National League pennant? And we're not even done yet in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put them at the top of the division over the champs, who find a way to win year in, year out when the Mets haven't even had a winning season in a long time and haven't had a winning run of seasons in quite a long time. So, but look, with the talent that they have, if everybody stays healthy, obviously DeGrom and Scherzer at their ages are question marks. But if those guys can both make 25 starts for them and the Mets get into a postseason series with DeGrom and Scherzer, then absolutely they're contenders and taken seriously. Right now, they feel more like a wild card team than a division team, but who knows? I mean, you know, I know you hosted Loudmouths for a while, so you made a few predictions, and you know that we never know what we're talking about when we predict. It's like so hard. Who knew the Braves? Who knew that Jorge Soler would be the World Series MVP for the Atlanta Braves?
Yeah.
As of right now, I think they're second. That's the second best in the division. Who the hell knows how it's going to play out, right?
You're just taking all the fun out of it.
Well, you know, we like to have logical adult conversations here.
But that's not for the air, Andy. That's not for the air.
I like to treat your listeners like the mature adults who can handle nuance that they are, Chris.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you. At least they can. I can't. Be good, brother.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.